I'm very happy now to welcome Scott Crocker. He is the producer and director of the documentary film Ghost Bird, which is screening on Monday, the 15th of November at 7 o'clock at the University of New Mexico Student Building, the Sub Theater, on the UNM campus. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's great to be here.
So this film documents the story around a species of woodpeckers called the ivory-billed woodpecker, which was long thought to have gone extinct and which was then discovered in a small town in Arkansas. What happened?
Well, you know, it even has a little bit of a backstory to that. It was thought to have gone extinct the turn of the last century with the felling of the clear-cutting of the large cypress and tupelo swamps of the southeast. And it was originally sort of rediscovered in the 20s and 30s. And then they found this remnant population of 16 in Louisiana, which at the time was believed to be the largest viable remnant population and the last really that was ever studied and known to exist and is agreed upon by everyone to have existed. And that population, as the film tells us, unfortunately lost to logging as well, although ironically it was at a time when we knew better and we watched them disappear one by one. And so that sort of sets up the backstory to the rediscovery that happened in 2004. It was kept secret for 14 months and then announced to the world in 2005. And that was, you know, it's a bird that people have been looking for ever since it first went extinct and has launched miniature expeditions over the years. You know, John Dennis was in the Big Thicket. He's an ornithologist, so was in the Big Thicket in the 60s and 70s and said he saw it down there. There was an expedition as recently as 2001 down in Louisiana, the Pearl River Expedition. And then in between there have been sightings and alleged photographs and, various efforts to prove the bird existed. And this became, in 2005, the announcement of the bird's existence in Arkansas, outside a town called Brinkley, became the biggest effort ever to recover a lost species. It was enormous. There were millions of dollars poured into this, and so it was just a landmark announcement and a landmark moment for the people involved and for birders worldwide who had tracked this bird. It's found in fast food. Like a plate, whatever the kids' meals in Australia, you can find an ivory-billed woodpecker toy. It's on stamps from Tanzania. It's a bird that's just sort of so iconic, even though it was endemic to the United States and Cuba to some extent. It's known around the world. It's just sort of this iconic bird.
It's so interesting to me because I'd never thought about this before, that extinction is hard to prove. It's in a sense proving a negative. And so when when a species goes extinct, there's still people who are looking for it.
Yeah, and science wrestles with this and kind of comes up with a fudge answer for it, which is, you know, if you presume a species lives X length of time, double that, and if no one's seen it in that period of time in twice its lifetime, perhaps we can start calling it extinct. And then as that time grows longer and more people agree that this is probably an extinct species and none are discovered or claimed to exist, then everybody sort of gets together. And the governing body of whatever group that sort of oversees that particular species says, okay, this is extinct, and they agree. Now it's extinct, and now in all the guidebooks for that species that get disseminated, it'll say extinct next to that bird.
So in addition to the destruction of habitat, which was the main reason for its extinction, one of the things I found interesting in the film was, I mean, you see these ornithologists opening drawers that are full of these dead, stuffed, ivory-billed woodpeckers, and that there were so many of them collected and not just these birds, but other birds too, that their collection actually had a significant effect on the survival rate of the species.
Yeah, well, this is classic supply and demand, isn't it? It's like with the black rhino today, which is an incredibly rare species, it's only worth more to the people who still want its horn. So as these species were disappearing, and unfortunately at a time when collecting was becoming a very not only profitable but desirable enterprise, you know, people didn't have the internet, and they didn't have TVs, so people of means would procure collections of oddities and put them in their homes and estates, and they became sort of touchstones for discussions and conversation starters. And there were some people who were better at collecting these species than others. A gentleman who provided Harvard University with its massive collection, most of its specimens of ivory bill, is a guy named William Brewster, who was both a sort of entrepreneur and a bird hunter. And so he went out and I can't remember the number that he donated to the museum, but it currently houses 61 specimens, which is the largest anywhere by far. And as you point out, it happened at a time when the bird was starting to disappear on its own already. To see that many species get collected had to have taken a toll on the disappearance of the bird. Mm-hmm. Whether the bird could have recovered at that point, we don't know. You know, when we look at species and as they get, depends on the animal, but as they drop in population and get cut off from each other and no longer sort of communicating genetically with one another, we don't really know what the smallest viable number is. And we can start to project, you know, was that 16 ivory bills in Louisiana that was tracked in the 20s and 30s, was that enough to recover the species? If we'd saved those, would they still be around today, or would that have been too small of a viable population and they would have interbred and had disease and died off? We don't know.
Part of the story that you tell in Ghost Bird is of the effect of the rediscovery of the ivory-billed woodpecker on this town of Brinkley, Arkansas. It was really good for business.
Yeah, which only sort of played into the sort of momentum of the story. It was in their interest, the people of Brinkley, to have this bird rediscovered in their backyard, though it's a place they go every day to recreate. They don't have a lot of other opportunities, and they spend a lot of their time out in the swamps, either deer hunting or just recreating. And so to have northern academics come down and tell them about a bird that is in their backyard, for those who hadn't seen it before, was perhaps, a kind of whimsical event. And they were happy to agree that maybe it was out there and maybe they'd seen it a few times themselves.
Right.
We won't really know until, someone produces better documentation than that we found already, whether that's what they were seeing or not. Of course, the Lab of Ornithology at Cornell University still believes it saw at least one bird there and holds to that claim.
Well,
so, five years have passed now and no better documentation than a very blurry 4-second video has been produced. And the sightings by individuals, but you can't really enter them into scientific confirmation.
Well, that's then the question of whether when a rediscovery like this has been made and it's been endorsed by a respectable institution like Cornell, and then there's no further documentation, we don't to this day know whether we still actually have ivory-billed woodpeckers.
Yeah, which really goes to the heart of why I made the film, because I was interested in sort of the limits of human certainty and sort of the bigger epistemological questions that come out of just witnessing something and whether you've seen it or not. And if you come to the table with the desire to see something, does that shape what you end up finding? And a lot of research into this suggests it does. So whether this was a matter of it's the perfect storm of wishful thinking, or whether it was just one bird, the last one, and it disappeared shortly after being sighted, remains to be seen. You know, I think the conventional wisdom is probably tipping towards the fact that perhaps they didn't see one.
The larger story is about habitat, the continued destruction of habitat for logging or for whatever purposes of clearing trees in the case of these birds means continued extinction.
Yeah, and that really is sort of, you know, for the film, the central character ends up becoming the habitat and the swamp. You know, we talk about the bird, but you never encounter the bird. We go looking for it, and we end up traipsing through the habitat it used to exist in, and all we're seeing really is, for the most part, a secondary forest that has recovered from the initial clear-cutting. It's a very different forest. It's a forest that's dominated by understory growth rather than the vast open land that sort of existed under these mammoth trees previously. And what we're reminded of is, you know, our own footprint as a species on the planet and how, you know, as we grow, we take up habitat that other species need for their own existence. And at some point we have to ask a question, sort of an ethical question of, you know, when is our existence superior to another species and how many species is too many to lose for our own benefit? And then where's the tipping point? What point do you sort of destroy so many species that becomes a self-preservation concern?
Exactly.
Then we're next, you know.
Scott Crocker is producer and director of the documentary Ghost Bird, and it is being screened this coming Monday, the 15th of November at 7 o'clock at the University of New Mexico Student Building, the Sub Theater in Albuquerque on the UNM campus. If people would like more information about the film, they can go to ghostbirdmovie.com. It's an absolutely wonderful film, and it's just been great to have you on the air, Scott Crocker, producer and director of Ghost Bird.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.